You're listening to The Audit, presented by IT Audit Labs.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of The Audit. I'm joined today by Eric Brown and Nate Ristine. Nate, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Excellent. Today, we're going to, you know, kind of go through everything phishing. Nate is, well, I would call him a subject matter expert in the field. He works us day to day, amongst many other things, but this is really what we wanted to dive into today. So, Nate, first things first, what's your day-to-day operations look like?
Well, first thing is coffee. You can't go without coffee.
You need it.
So, 2 or 3 cups of coffee, start looking through some alerts, digging through some of the phishing emails that have been reported, sift out the false positives, get those back and into the rightful owner's hands. Then you find the malicious ones, the more fun ones to go through. A lot of the day when going through those is, I guess it really depends on how many you have. If you've got 100 malicious ones you got to go through, then you got to go through them kind of quick, get them done. But when you've got a few and you can really deep dive onto them and really look and see what the attacker's goal is, those are the most fun.
Absolutely, yeah. When you're going through these, is there a specific day of the week that you've noticed that's worse? Is it Monday? Is it kicking off right away, or is Wednesday the more than others, or is there a specific day you can remember?
Monday mornings, people are normally catching up on emails that have come in through the weekend or on sure. Fridays. So you'll normally see quite a bit of them on Monday mornings.
I always felt like, at least when I was looking through these types of things, and I always felt like Fridays things just blew up in your face and you were ready for a long day going into the weekend.
Yeah. For me, Fridays have always been the calmest because I don't think anyone likes to work on Fridays. So
that's a good point.
Check their emails.
They're late to check their emails on Friday.
Just to back up a second on your coffee, are you grinding your own beans or what are you doing there?
I do grind my own beans, yes.
All right, let's unpack that because I'm also
interested now.
Yeah, a bit of a coffee guy myself, you could say. So what do you do? What's your routine?
I take a half cup of whole beans, grind them up into a fine powder. And put them in the Mr. Coffee machine and let it run.
Gotcha.
Oh, so you're not doing a pour over or anything?
No, nothing fancy for me yet.
Cool. Are you getting the beans from anywhere special?
Walmart.
Hey, there you go.
Big spender.
What about you, Nick?
Yeah, I kind of go all over the place. We have a Nespresso and we just got a new Keurig because they kind of crap out, I feel like, once a year, but the new one has like a milk frother and everything. So it does like all kinds of crazy stuff. And it's like, can be on the Wi-Fi. Ours is not, but it can be.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. One less point of failure to be hacked. So we'll leave it off the network. But yeah, I actually like to do pour overs, I guess, quite regularly. That would be my poison of choice, I guess.
Yeah. Cool. And Nate, how many tattoos?
Just the one.
Just one tattoo?
But the one is a quarter of my body. So.
Okay. All right. Yep. So I don't think you can be in security without any tattoos, can you? I mean, unless you're posing. I'm not sure. What do you think?
Yeah. I think you got to have some of them. Yeah. I think they're kind of like battle scars, right? They just like comes with the territory.
That poses the question. What are yours, Eric?
So interesting. I don't have any, so I must be posing. No. But I did. I went to CES this year and I got the Prinker, which is a tattoo printer. So like you can print tattoos and they look, yeah, I don't know. They look okay. But started playing around with that.
Actually bought the printer?
Yeah, the printer.
Oh, that's awesome. Because I saw you send that, and that thing is pretty cool.
Yeah, when I got home, I ordered one.
Yeah, that's really cool. So it's kind of like you can just print whatever tattoo you want. You can just find anything online and print it.
Yeah, it's certain size restrictions. Like, you know, it's like an inch wide by 5 inches long, something like that. Yeah, you can do some cool stuff with it. You can make a snake. Yeah. And then, Nate, just by way of setting the stage, the organization that you're working for now and doing a lot of research with, you get about 100,000 emails a day. And of those, I don't know, what do you think are spam? About 50% are, or 60% are spam, malicious, whatever, like non-business related?
From emails outside of the organization, maybe 40 to 50% fit that not necessary range, whether it be marketing campaigns or malicious attachments.
Yeah.
Nate, when you say not necessary, what do you mean by that?
It can be a lot of spam or something that's truly malicious or something that's a marketing campaign where it's not malicious, but 90% of people don't want to look at them either. So I guess low priority is a good way to classify them.
Sure. Absolutely.
So we were getting into, you come in, you have your coffee and you're starting to unpack these emails. So let's say you find one that bypassed all of the filters. It's actually a legit phishing email. What do you do?
If we've already determined that it's 100% malicious, then I dive right into clicking all the links, figuring out where things are going, what the attacker's goal is, what kind of information are they trying to capture, and that kind of stuff.
Are you just clicking the links on your regular machine?
Nope. I will bring the email into a sandbox environment, whether it be a virtual box, VMware, or some random server up in Azure or AWS.
And are there tools that you use to see what they're doing? Like, how do you exploit this, or how do you look at it?
When opening up the link, you can view the source code of, normally it's an attachment that they send. So you can view the source code of the attachment or the landing page and kind of look through what they're supposed to be doing or what they're showing that they're going to do on the front end. That can lead to some information like pre-populating the email address of the victim in majority of cases. Or causing redirects. With a lot of phishing campaigns, they'll send you this attachment that loads up a web page. That web page is going to send you to two or three different URLs before you actually hit the actual phishing site. So you can find a lot of the steps in the chain by looking at the source code. Once you start clicking on stuff and entering credentials or, well, fake credentials or other information that they're looking for, you can load up Burp Suite or some other proxy and capture all the information that's going back and forth. That way you can really see, what kind of information they're doing, what portions of the website are being executed, and what format they're accepting the data in.
What's something interesting that you've seen?
I think the most interesting one I've found like that, when I went to submit credentials, it actually executed a PHP code or a piece of PHP code that was supposed to be hidden on the back end, but it was actually shown in the front end, it was accessible on the front end. So I was able to grab the code that was actually sending or in control of sending the credentials to their repository. So that was pretty fun. Unfortunately, they had that repository pretty locked down. Well, they screwed up on the phishing site. They were doing things right on that side.
Sure. Nate, you mentioned Burp Suite. I think that leads me into wondering kind of what are your go-to tools, or is there a handful of tools or one or two that you just feel like you couldn't do your job without?
Burp Suite would probably be one of them. Capturing that data going back and forth is pretty essential. And a good text editor really is the other very important thing. A lot of these attachments, they're just HTML attachments, or if you're looking at the headers, you want that data to look clean and be easily readable. So having a good text editor is very important.
Yeah, that's good information to have for sure. I think, you know, obviously too, with the times that we're in, you know, things are happening on the news that drive, you know, different phishing attempts, attacks, you know, what have you, you know, right now, or is there anything that you've been kind of key in on that you're seeing, common trends, tactics, you know, that you can comment on?
Yeah. Well, right now there's, well, I guess not as much right now, but when the Ukraine-Russian war began, there was a lot of emails with information on that. Back during the George Floyd stuff, there was phishing stuff on that. Any major event in the world is going to be phishing emails for it.
Sure. And I suppose when you bring up, you know, the Ukraine war, that brings in kind of that emotional aspect. And Eric, I know you have spoken about this before as well, you know, kind of a new thing we're seeing along with social engineering goes alongside with phishing as well, that emotional engineering. I think, you know, we're seeing it more and more, but I think we can probably unpack a lot there, right? Is that something you're seeing, Nate? Is, you know, you click on this link, you get a free burrito. You know, I see you laughing right now. So yeah. This is kind of a fun one.
Yep. Emotional stuff can be one of the better ways for the attackers to actually get their phishing stuff to work.
It's kind of a low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the phishing emails you'll see are just kind of blasted out to everyone. They're very generic. But if it comes to a point where it's a more targeted attack, they can get pretty ruthless on how they do it when it comes to pulling on emotional heartstrings.
It's a good point, Nick and Nate. I was at a security meetup the other day, and some pen testers were talking about some of the techniques and some of the clients that they worked with. And one pen testing company was replaced because their social engineering campaign, where they were doing a phishing attack to you know, to get a way into the organization, used some pretty harsh emotional engineering against a specific person. And the discussion then was around, you know, as pen testers, right, we're the good guys, and we're not trying to cause emotional stress or strain or damage on an individual at the organization, because if we were, right, you could win every time, so to speak, because those always get through. So then the thought was, well, you know, can we come up with other ways to get into an organization without going to that extreme? And I think unilaterally the answer was yes. And then the conversation turned to what about the monthly campaigns that we do? And Nate, you were talking about the real world examples that we're seeing tend to follow what's happening in the news, because that's current. So what do you guys think about that, right? As we craft training emails for our user base, where do those training emails lie, right? Are they on the side where there is that emotional piece, or is it, you know, a little bit more fun kind of in the middle with the burrito, or is it, you know, something with misspelled words that looks pretty obvious to most that it's a phishing email?
I think it can be kind of tough to gauge, really, because those very difficult or phishing simulations that are on that higher end, where they are very well crafted and pull on those emotional heartstrings, from a security perspective, should be what we're doing. We should be testing users for that, so that they're aware and they find those little details that signify that it's a phishing email. But again, on the other side, we, a team, we're not their enemy. We're their coworkers. We're their friends. You know, we shouldn't be pulling or pulling on those strings like that. So it is a very hard thing to balance.
I think it's kind of a double-bladed sword.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no winning.
I can see both sides of it. You know, personally, I don't think we should be pinning them down all the time. I do think we need to just be honest with ourselves, and we have to look at it through the lens of the attacker. They're not going to take it easy on our colleagues, coworkers too, even though they're our friends. We see them every day at the water cooler. You know, they're getting the same emails that we are. We should be crafting similar ones to test them. When I was in the military, my senior leaders used to always tell us, probably when we were complaining too much, that, you know, the more we sweat in peace, the less we bleed in war. So I think if we can simulate the best training, you know, right, that for our customers or clients or our colleagues, whatever have you, you know, we're really doing the best service for them, because we want to train them for these, you know, 50% of the emails that are coming in that we said earlier that are spam, right? We want to train them for the real deal. So yeah, it's kind of a double-bladed sword. You don't want to, you know, bait them in all the time, think they're getting a free burrito or tickets to an amusement park, right, per se. But, you know, those are the emails that they are getting. So we definitely have to, you know, train them for that.
Well, we spend a lot of time and effort dealing with non-business emails because the malicious actors are using that as a threat vector. So it hasn't gone away. It seems to be, it's probably gotten worse. And no matter what tools we have, they still get through, right? I mean, there's great tools out there, new ways to catch these emails all the time, blow them up in a sandbox, but they're still seeing that, right? It's still making it through all of those defenses, and it comes down to the human at the end. You know, I've advocated in the past that from a business perspective, there's no reason to have commercial or emails from commercial accounts that contain href links. So if you removed the ability to click on a link from the email, that would, I think, solve a lot of problems. If the user really wanted to get to whatever that was, they could copy paste it into a browser, but most of the time you would see that it's a really long string of numbers and letters is masqueraded by that href link that goes to, you know, some common words that might entice you to click on it, but really it's just going back to a site that was spun up, you know, in some sort of cloud hosting provider that is used to capture creds or redirect or what have you. But it's probably a $1 trillion industry, that email filtering. And Nate, you were talking before, kind of offline, about maybe some of the stuff that you do with the credit cards, right? Because you'll get a phishing link, you'll exploit it, and then it's asking for some sort of payment. What do you do there?
So I've been trying to find new ways to dig deeper into the attacker's goals. So over the holidays, I was sent a text message or a link from a text message that had it for UPS. So I went in there and I was going through it. And it was a very good looking site. I mean, if I didn't notice the URL, I would have believed it was UPS. I started going through it, and you click on a couple links, you enter in your zip code, and they then want you to add personal information. So you throw in a fake name, fake address, and everything. And then it tells you, well, your package, it was redirected, or you have to pay $1.45 plus VAT, which is European tax, which didn't make sense, but something that the Italians have done a little bit better is have American tax on there. But once you enter in all this personal information, then it asks you for a credit card to pay this $1.45 fee. Well, not many people want to give up their credit card number just for testing. So there's a site called privacy.com. You can sign up for free. You link your bank account on one end, and then on this privacy.com end, you get to make as many free credit cards as you want. So you can use different names, different zip codes, different credit card numbers, expiration dates. Everything can be different for every single purchase. What I typically do is I'll set like a dollar spending limit. So that way, when they do try to charge my card, they can't take more than a dollar. But yeah, so I throw one of those fake credit cards in there, wait a couple of days, and then start seeing charges. This one specifically was for, I think it was Squarespace, which is a website hosting website or service. Maybe they were trying to set up a new phishing site to trick more people, or maybe they were just using that to test if the card was valid to go sell the credit card number on the dark net. It's hard to know, but once that dollar, they tried to charge $1.45 and that failed because it was over my limit. So I guess I don't really know what they would have done next. So yeah, next time around, maybe I step it up a little bit. Maybe I risk $2, put $2 on the line to see where it goes next, you know?
I think you should do that and report back, please.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yep. But another thing I've been meaning to dig into a little bit more, with Google Workspace, you can set up this business email address for fairly cheap, and you can monitor the emails that have been sent out from like an admin perspective. So I let this account get compromised, and then from the admin side of things, I can see all the emails that go out from them to further investigate what their attacks are, what they're trying to do. But that I'm a little bit skeptical about moving into doing that, because then I'm knowingly allowing them to compromise this email and use it to attack others. So unless I can edit the email before it's sent and say, like in the subject line, this is a phishing email, don't click, then I could see myself getting some negative results if I knowingly allowed an attacker to continue working.
Can you send it off to a different mail relay where you control that relay, and then you can manipulate the outbound messages?
Like you could just shoot it to a trash can or something like that.
Yeah. Don't know. I haven't found that available or that option in Google yet, but maybe. There's definitely other services that can do it, though. Sure. I just don't know if Google Workspace can do it.
So you're seeing, I think you mentioned text messages too, right? Have you guys mm-hmm. both been getting smishing or SMS phishing messages?
I have one work phone and one personal phone. My personal phone, I don't get anything, which I don't know how I've managed to do that, but I guess it was just luck of the draw.
They know not to mess with you.
What's your phone number?
Yeah, 69410028. Yeah.
Your work phone, you get a lot though, Nate?
Yeah, my work phone gets a lot. I don't know why that would be. Maybe it was just luck of the draw. Maybe having it associated with different accounts.
Whoever had the phone number before you could have used it and then was involved in a breach or something.
Yep. That's very possible.
Yeah, for some reason, over the past 2 days, I've gotten one from Amazon that my account, you know, they noticed some, you know, some odd activity with a link, and these are good emails. The only way that I know is because of the sender information that comes up on the top on an iPhone. I'm sure it does on the same thing on an Android.
But on the top, about text? It
says, yeah, this is via text. Yep.
Okay.
And I got another one a couple days before that from PayPal, you know, saying the same thing. And they want me to call. They didn't leave a number, but they specifically say, you know, to unlock your account, you know, contact us or click on this link again with a crazy. I didn't. I did not. And
you should call it. Throw it on the speaker right now. Let's see what happens.
This one right here, it says call us, but the number is blank. It doesn't have a number. Ah. That's why it's odd. Otherwise, I definitely would be down to do that. And then I got one from Netflix. And I think we've all seen that one, too, where, you know, they want us to change our password or what have you. Suspicious activity logged in somewhere else. So they're definitely out there in abundance. That's for sure.
That'd be a fun episode if we each came with a couple numbers and we just start calling them.
It would be very interesting, that's for sure. I think people would love that.
And then we just tie the two together and let them talk to each other and see what happens.
Yeah, I think I've seen that as a video where some lady calls the two Chinese takeout restaurants and they're yelling back and forth, no, you called me. No, you called me. What do you want? What's your order? No, you called. So similar thinking. That could be pretty.
Yeah,
there's a couple Twitch streamers out there that focus on this kind of stuff where they call the scammer and trick them.
Yep.
It's always fun to watch.
Where they're trying to get back. And I think I saw one where they were able to get the guy's camera mm-hmm. on and see the building that they were in.
Yeah.
How about offline stuff? Have you gotten anything offline? Mail?
I don't think I've gotten anything too crazy in the mail. There's definitely the weird marketing campaigns. But other than that, I don't really get anything from mail.
Nate, because you're in this industry, do you get a lot of texts and calls from your mom or anybody, family, dad, grandma, grandpa, saying, hey, Nate, I got this message. You know, is this legit? Do you get that?
Yeah. There's definitely been the calls of, what do I do?
Yeah.
Certainly happened quite often. During this talk, I remember this call. It, like we were talking about earlier about calling the scammers and see what they're trying to do. A few years ago, my mom plugged in her computer and she got this pop-up saying, call Windows support right now. Your computer's locked for this and that. The common thing you'd see nowadays. But she called him and the guy kept asking for money. So she called me and she's like, can you figure out what's going on? I was like, yeah, it's a scam. Let me call him. So I spent an hour on the phone with this guy, just leading him.
An hour? Wow.
Yep. I was definitely bored. it was quite exciting. After a while, I was just kind of telling him, well, this is what's wrong with my computer. And I've got this screen just making stuff up because I didn't really have computer or the alert in front of me. And he goes, well, we're going to have to charge you to fix it. I was like, how much? The guy didn't give me a price. He says, how much can you pay? I was like, wait, what? How much can I pay? He's like, well, I've got, it's like, let me look at my bank. So I look at my account and I'm like, I've got 5 million. Just completely joking. And he's like, all right, it's going to cost 50 grand for us to fix it. I was like, all right, you ready for the card number? And I read off a card number and yeah, no, nothing ever came of it. But after a while, he started to realize that I was messing with him. And yeah, some very naughty words came out after that.
So he was posing as Microsoft support?
Yep.
Funny.
Yeah, that's one of the common ones now is if you come across, I guess you'd call it a malicious ad, yep. It kind of hijacks the browser and makes it go full screen. And it's just a bunch of pop-ups and sometimes audio saying, call support, your computer's been locked for, I don't know, sometimes it's child porn or...
Yes, yep.
So, Nate, you've... participated in some security contests in the past, right? Like where it's a capture the flag event or red team, blue team type of events where you're trying to go through and do specific objectives, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have any of those scenarios or the problems presented in those scenarios mimicked some of the things that you've seen in the real world at your job?
Yeah, the goal of a lot of the capture the flag stuff is it can kind of be twofold or two parts. One is going to be more focused on teaching, and one is going to be more focused on challenging. So in some of the early capture the flag challenges, or in some of the early challenges, they'll have you go through kind of your common steps. Go look through the headers to find some information, whether the IP address is aligned or the sender's domain name or the email from is the same. So maybe they throw a flag in there. Another flag could be in the source code of the website or the link that you're going to. And another flag could be maybe an email you get or another phishing email you get after you submit your credentials or something of that sort. Then it can dive into the more challenging aspect where it's going to be not just the things that you would see in a normal phishing email, but now you need to think outside of the box. This is going to be the challenge portion of it, where not everyone's going to be able to get it, not a lot of the professionals are going to be able to get it because it's so out there. It's not something you're going to expect to see, but it's a challenge.
Well, thanks again, Nate, for joining us today on The Audit. And to all of our listeners, thank you again. And be sure to check out our previous episodes anywhere you can find podcasts in your favorite platform. And check out our website at itauditlabs.com.
Want security leadership without the headcount? As an extension of the team, IT Audit Labs will provide the experts to guide and counsel your company. We will start by creating a custom security program that caters to your industry while providing transparency and remediation to improve cyber posture while reducing risk. Contact IT Audit Labs to find out more. Premium.